You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is the Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings. And that would be me. Welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is WDIY. I'm Alan Jennings, and I have a lot of fun doing this show and with WDIY. There are so many interesting stories in our world and so many sub-stories that rarely get told. With newspapers in decline, those stories are less and less likely to be told. One intriguing development, history-making, I'm sure, in the 2020 election was the victory by a middle-aged woman, a former school teacher, and small businesswoman with a familiar last name being elected to the Pennsylvania State Legislature from the 131st District. But this is no ordinary middle-aged woman. This is Milou McKenzie. Milou, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan.
And I hate introducing women by who they're married to or who they were married to or what men are in their lives, but Milou is the ex-wife of longtime Lehigh County Republican Committee Chairman Charles McKenzie. Her son, Ryan, is beginning his sixth term in the General Assembly. He's got the 134th District. When I first met Ryan, I considered him to be the prince of the GOP. Here he is, the son of long-serving chairman of the party, member of the same church that I attend, First Presbyterian Church in Allentown. So out of all of this is the first mother-son coupling in a state legislature, to my knowledge. Is that right? This is history, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And their districts abut. To me, this is fascinating, loaded with potential side stories that might never get told in today's news media. So I get to bring some of those stories to life right here. So I want to welcome Ryan now. Ryan, thanks for joining us on Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Hey, Helen, how are you,
sir? I'm good. How are you?
Good, doing well. Thanks for having me back on the show.
When your mother told you she was taking our shot at the race, did you go, Mom?
Well, you know, it's funny. You mentioned some of our family history. I grew up in a family where talking about politics and government and our community were things that were always discussed around the dinner table. So I've known for my entire life that she had an interest in these things, but I never exactly thought that she herself would run for office just because she had always been somebody who was supportive of me in my career and helped on other campaigns, but she had never really expressed an interest in running herself. So it definitely caught me by surprise.
So, Milou, how long did this kind of percolate in your mind before you told Ryan that you were going to try to represent the district right next to him?
Well, it actually happened a little bit gradually because Ryan approached me when he had heard that Justin Simmons was not going to be running for his seat again. And he said, Mom, do you know anyone in your district who might want to run? And do you think you can find a good candidate for us? So I went around the district and I spoke to quite a few wonderful young people who I thought would be ideal for the position. And one by one, they all said no. So it started to gradually occur to me that maybe I should do it. And I didn't tell anyone about that for a while. I thought about it and I prayed about it. And eventually I said to Ryan, Ryan, I think I'm going to do it. And his jaw dropped. I think he was speechless, actually.
I'll bet.
He was completely taken off guard, but he said, well, if you really want to, Mom, you have to really want to. And then he gave me the speech that he gives to every potential candidate about how hard it is and all of that. And I did realize that, but I just felt deep in my heart that this was a time in my life that I could step up.
Yeah, well, the whole thing just fascinates me. So who gets to be the chair of the McKenzie caucus?
Well,
I think I have seniority
experience
in this job.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring. You got the seniority, Ryan. But she is your mother, after all.
That's right. So it's a bit of a conflict on that point.
Do you have similar politics? I mean, you're both Republicans. I know that. I don't think you had a choice, Ryan, but are there issues that separate the two of you, or do you see yourselves as, in fact, a caucus of two who will always be able to deliver those two votes?
Yeah, we're always representing our individual districts, and we are independent thinkers, and, you know, we have plenty that we agree on, certainly, but there are issues where we're going to diverge, and, you know, we've talked about those things and how we're going to handle that, but we have a very strong relationship, and nothing's going to change that, so we'll agree and disagree just like we do with all of our other colleagues.
Malou, you seem ready to go for that question. Did you have an answer differently?
No, I think that that's a good idea. I think that of course, we're both very well grounded in our conservative values, with that I think that I had a large part in passing on to Ryan. So I don't see us diverging on big, substantial issues, but we might differ occasionally on how things are implemented or just subtle differences. But again, we have great respect for each other, so I don't think either one of us would ever be upset if we want to go in a different direction.
If you end up with what in Washington is called a colloquy, when you have two members that are kind of discussing an issue, sometimes collaboratively, sometimes contentiously, how are you going to salute each other? Is it going to be the gentleman from Lehigh? Is it going to be Mom? I mean, what are you going to call each other on the House floor?
Ryan calls me Malou out there, and I appreciate that because I don't want to just be viewed as just somebody's mother. They're having lots of mom jokes out there, though, because some of them call me Mom, some of them call me Mrs. McKenzie because they say they can't refer to Ryan's mother as anything but Mrs. McKenzie. But we're equals, I would say, and peers. Ryan has been an adult for 20 years or more, so I don't feel that he needs a whole lot of mothering at this point.
Well, when I first, Ryan, I don't know if you remember, the first time we met, there was an issue that I was involved with that dealt with L&I, the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry, and Ryan was a very senior staff person. I think you were like, what, 26 at the time, I think, Ryan?
Yeah, around there, yep. I think I just started at the department 26 or 27, yep.
And he's got an MBA, or what's your degree at Harvard?
That's correct. I received my MBA from Harvard.
Well, and, you know, I'm like totally intimidated by Ivy Leaguers. And so here's this young Republican with a Harvard degree who's like, what were you, deputy secretary?
I was the policy director at the department.
Yeah.
I oversaw legislation development and policy planning.
Well, you know, so you got some serious credentials here. So how often, Malou, do you have to call your son and say, you know, who do I talk to at Labor and Industry? Who do I talk to at the General Services Administration? Or do you have to rely on this six-term son for a lot of guidance and advice and information?
Yes. I feel like Ryan is kind of a mentor in some ways. But
that is so,
so
cool.
So are the other legislators in our Lehigh Valley delegation. So
yeah.
I look to all of them because they're all more senior than I am. So I'm just appreciative that they know the ropes and can show me the way.
Are there issues that have geopolitical consistency between your two districts? Are there any things, you know, like funding for a road or a bridge or water purification or whatever that both of you have an interest in that you can now double up and fight for together? Do you have any of those?
I'm sure they will come up, Alan. In my time in the legislature, I've worked collaboratively with other members here in the Lehigh Valley, our State Senator Brown and a number of the other folks in our delegation from adjoining districts. And so we do share portions of Lehigh County and portions of the East Penn School District and Salisbury School Districts. So those are the closest areas of overlap. So I envision there will be times during a legislative session when issues relating to one of those geographic areas do come up and they reach out to their members of their House delegation and ask for help and support. And we will have to tag team on those things and definitely work together. So looking forward to that, actually.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I, during my regular life, run the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. I consider every elected official in Lehigh Valley an ally or a potential ally. And it doesn't matter if you're conservative or a liberal, a Democrat or Republican, I think we can all work together. And so I have the pleasure of hosting Malou McKenzie, freshman legislator from the 131st Pennsylvania District, and her six-term incumbent son, Ryan McKenzie, who represents the 134th, Ryan?
That's correct, 134th.
Yeah. So are there any liberals in the with McKenzie blood running through their veins?
Not in our immediate family.
I thought not. So, okay, let's get into some serious stuff. Just a couple of policy-related questions. I think the toughest issue facing us today has little to do with legislation or regulation. It has to do with civility of the discourse. I just think it's so coarsened. And I don't care which side you're on, and I know both sides blame each other, and the things that one side does the other, they get ratcheted up when the other side gets control, and it just seems to get worse and worse. And so I'm wondering if either of you have any thoughts about is this as serious as some like me are making it? And if so, what do you think can be done about it?
So, I'll speak from my perspective in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives and during my tenure there of almost 9 years now. So what I've seen is that during that time, the tension and rhetoric has started to rise in state government, but thankfully it has not breached the walls like it has at the federal level. Yeah. And I mean,
good
that
metaphor, Ryan.
So at the state level, there always has been a much stronger, I think, strain of bipartisanship, collaboration. You see it again in our Lehigh Valley delegation, like we've talked about. We always work together on issues that are important to our community in a bipartisan fashion. And so we'll come together as Republicans and Democrats and sign letters of support or help advance each other's legislation when it's appropriate. So I think that's something that I've appreciated, and I don't think you see as much of that at the federal level.
Yeah.
And so we are constantly, I think, working to try and maintain that in state government, because really the wheels of state government are very much impactful for people's lives in their everyday, which a lot of people don't realize how much of an impact state government has. And so it's really important that those wheels keep functioning and keep moving. And so, again, we always are trying to fight that off. And we've been successful so far, but I think there is more partisanship that's seeping into state government. And so, again, we always got to guard against that and work for the interest of the people in our community.
Malou, do you have thoughts about that?
Well, just coming in as a freshman, on the orientation day, I bonded with a young gentleman from Philadelphia who's from the opposite party, but I consider him one of my friends already in the legislature. So I'm hoping to, at least on a human personal level, be friendly with the Democrats. I hope that they'll reciprocate and be friendly with me.
We're going to take a short break. This is WDIY. Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests tonight are the McKenzie Caucus of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. That is Ryan McKenzie and his mother, Malou McKenzie, who served together in neighboring districts in the Pennsylvania State Legislature. Stick around for more with the McKenzies.
This is WDIY Executive Director Greg Caponia wishing everyone a Happy New Year and thanks for your continued support as we proudly begin our 26th year serving the Lehigh Valley community. As we enter 2021, we are aware of the challenges facing small businesses working to retain their customer base while reaching out to new customers. If you run a small business, let us help you get the word out. For the next 4 months, we will be offering affordable underwriting messages geared to small business. For information, please send an email to greg@wdiy.org. Thank you.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture, from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
Okay, welcome back. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We're talking to Malou McKenzie, freshman state representative, and her son, Ryan McKenzie, who is in his sixth term in the state house. Been a very interesting discussion. First time in history, a mother-son team in the state legislature. It's pretty cool. The state budget. I don't know if I ever remember, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I don't know if I ever remember a budget discussion that wasn't contentious. This one's not going to be any different, is it?
I envision that it will be contentious, like you mentioned, as they have been in the past. And I've been in the legislature. We've been facing very difficult financial times, rising pension costs, rising health care costs, uncertain revenues. We've had a couple economic challenges, obviously, with the coronavirus and the housing crisis before that. So there are, you know, challenges on both the revenue side and the cost side of the budget. And so that leads to very difficult decisions. And we have been able to do our best and make things work. We're increased our contributions to pensions. We're making our payments now, which is a good thing. That came with some very difficult budget years. And so I think we're still in a similarly precarious position with the coronavirus really wreaking havoc. But there are some bright spots, I do have to say. You know, if
please we, tell
we've
me.
Seen numbers from, I mean, purely from a state revenue perspective, we've seen numbers coming in from around the country and here in the state that revenues are rebounding and they're coming back very strong. So the economy, starting at the end of last year, started to turn around. We're not at the end of our fiscal year, which is June 30th, but as of now, we're about $300 million above projection for the year in terms of revenue. So that's a good thing. Again, people are getting back in the economy, they're starting to spend money again. And the way that we collect revenue in the state is predominantly from personal income tax and sales tax. So if people are working and people are spending money in the economy, then revenues are coming into the state. And right now, those are tracking ahead of schedule. So, and we're seeing that around the country, actually, those numbers coming back. So, you know, that's a good sign because it does make our budgeting easier if those revenues are available. But at the same time, you still have your rising costs of pension and healthcare, which everybody knows continue to go up. So we do have to balance those out. But again, it seems like things economically are starting to turn the corner. And so we want to do everything we can in the legislature to start encouraging and promoting safe and responsible economic activity as people return to their lives.
You know, I'm assuming that in the McKenzie family, there is a real serious commitment to education. I mean, the fact that, Ryan, you went to Harvard, which I've already said intimidates the hell out of me. Your mother is a former school teacher. I have data that upsets me, and that is that 79% of white suburban high school students take the college entrance exams, SAT, ACT. In the Latino community, of people in the urban Latino community, the percentage is 8%. One-tenth of the percentage of white suburban kids who take it, and only 4% of urban African-American kids take it. In my thinking, that data right there explains a huge part of the income and wealth disparity between people that look like the three of us and people who don't. And I'm just wondering if that is an issue that gets attention from a suburban, you know, mostly suburban legislator, or, you know, I mean, how do you come down on that disparity?
Well, that isn't actually the only measurement. I think that there are quite a few problems, even at the elementary school level, between different groups. And I really, as a teacher, I loved all of my students, and I wanted to see all of them succeed. And I really am hoping that we can all work together to get all of the children in every district the most wonderful opportunity to have a level of education that my own children had. I know that's a lofty goal, and I don't quite know how to approach it, but that would be what I would want to see happen.
What a breath of fresh air. Thank you, Milou. I appreciate that. Ryan, do you have any thoughts about how to do this on a policy level, or is it not something that it's a state legislative matter?
No, I think you raise an interesting topic. And, you know, my mom's right. I mean, it does start at a very early age, the educational gap that you're talking about. And so we want to start addressing that throughout the entirety of a student's life. And it certainly there are lots of reforms that we would like to see in education. I know my mom and I have talked about some of those and her experience in classrooms, and that's already been helpful for me in a policy sense. But, you know, we are looking at ways to better appropriate our funds for school districts. So a number of years ago, we started implementing the basic education formula, which takes into account things like poverty, things like is English as a second language. Small school districts receive a boost because they have different cost structures. So We started to implement that, but we are a long way from having equal funding in our school districts. And so something that I've talked about as recently as last week out in Harrisburg is the need to speed up that process of evening out the education funding across our state. And so nice that we have a new formula that's been implemented, but only a fraction of the money across the state is actually being run through that. And so, again, we're trying to speed that up. That's something that I'm working on personally with some policy, and I think that's something that we want to start trying to advance in this year's budget to try to start leveling that playing field.
And I don't think that's, you know, that much of a barrier between the different sides. So for example, I talked to suburban superintendents, and they say they don't want anybody to take the existing funding they're getting in order to, you know, strengthen funding for the urban schools. But they do say that if you put new money into the system, they're okay with it disproportionately going to the urban school system. So that, I think, is a step in the right direction. So if we have a development of a potential for agreement on this issue, that would be so great, for, you know, certainly from the work that I do.
Yeah, and, you know, Alan, I mean, this is a classic example of where government has not done a good job. And so prior to both of us joining the legislature, the way that education funding was appropriated was purely on who had political strength and who was maybe a speaker or a majority leader, who was the head of the education committee. Their school districts got more funding, and that's how it worked. I mean, that's the bottom line. And that's not fair for anybody. And so when we, a number of years ago in the legislature, came up with this basic education funding formula, it passed overwhelmingly with bipartisan support, factors in, you know, the most important factor and the heaviest weighting is the number of students that you have in the classroom. But then it takes into account all of those other things that I had mentioned previously. And so we, by, again, overwhelming bipartisan majorities, agreed that that is the fair way to provide funding for education. And so now that we've agreed that that's the fair way to do it, we need to start seeing all of the money that's coming forward going through that system. So we do want to see that transition happen for certainly all new money, but we want to start seeing that happen faster. And so as new monies are coming in, they need to go through that. And again, we need to start speeding up that transition because, again, I think what's fair is fair, and we've determined that that is the system that we think is fair right now, that formula. So we need to start living by that and speaking with that through our legislation and our appropriations.
You know, first of all, Ryan, that's exciting to hear you say those things. I think it is the most surefire way that we lock inequity into our system is the way we fund public education, the way it's governed. And I think if we can get a handle on that, that would be great. Some serious research that's been done says that the biggest indicator of a poor performing school is the concentration of poverty. I'll tell you what I would really like to see is breaking up the Allentown school district and parceling it out to the surrounding school districts. I know that's not going to happen in my lifetime, probably not yours, but I do think that that's an issue that somehow we got to get a handle on. You know, we can't have a situation where the peer pressure is to fail, not to succeed, you know? Seems that we've got it now in urban schools. You know, if you succeed, then you're making the rest of us look bad. And that's not the way we want to do it, I don't think.
No, I mean, look, I think we want everybody to succeed. And so, yeah, I mean, that mentality of pitting one against each other is detrimental. And so, again, I think we need to realize that for our communities, the way that we succeed is when everybody succeeds.
One last issue before we let you go. A very prominent, and I don't want to give you too much information, it might name this person, but a very prominent official in the healthcare industry in the Lehigh Valley said that to me that Pennsylvania is the worst state in the country in how it's handled the pandemic. A, do you agree with that? And B, what needs to be done to make it work better?
It certainly seems that it is at the bottom of when they do the ratings for the entire nation. Pennsylvania always comes in near the bottom, and I just don't know why that is or what can be done about it, but it is a very deep concern for me because I don't think that we should be near the bottom. I think Pennsylvania has a lot of positives, and I just don't know how that continues to happen, but something has to change.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, Alan, I'll speak from my perspective. You know, one of the disappointing things about the state's response on coronavirus has been the lack of collaboration with the governor's office. And it's not just me. I mean, we had a labor and industry hearing last week where every member who spoke, Republican and Democrat, voiced their frustration to the Wolf administration and the lack of collaboration, the lack of willingness to work together on these issues. The governor has basically taken a my way or the highway approach and really shut us out from discussions. And I think we as members hear a lot from our constituents and from our districts and varying natures of our communities across the state. And we want to share that information. And it seems like it falls on deaf ears a lot. And I'm not saying that that would be the be-all, end-all of solving the virus or fixing the pandemic, but I think it would have given us a much better response. And, you know, it's something that, again, we've tried to speak with legislation to address those issues. We've passed numerous bills. The governor's vetoed a lot. We're continuing to pass legislation. And sometimes we work together, but oftentimes he doesn't want to listen to us at all and just wants to go his own way. And so that's been very disappointing because I don't think it had to be that way. In the very early days, we were working together, and then things just started going a very different direction, and the governor has taken the approach that he has. And so that's been very disappointing. Again, we've talked earlier about the need for bipartisan collaboration, and that has been really lacking. And again, it's not just me voicing our frustrations. Now, Republicans and Democrats who are speaking up and saying that things are not going well in the state. So we're going to continue to speak out, continue to say the things that we would like to see changed and done better, and hopefully we can see progress.
I promised you that was the last question, but I skipped one that I missed as I'm going through my notes here, and that is that small business is getting so whacked. I mean, restaurants in particular. Is there anything left that we can do to try to salvage the I mean, I know the economy is starting to bounce back. There are lots of signs of it, but, you know, there are a lot of small businesses really take a hit. Do you have any, are there any other things come up folks' sleeves that are percolating that might be useful for small business people?
Well, we just passed Senate Bill 2, which hopefully will address what Ryan was talking about with the collaboration between the legislature and the governor's position. It's going to go out on the ballot for our constituents to limit the governor's emergency powers to 21 days and then be reevaluated. I think with his extensions of the shutdowns, it was really more than a lot of our small businesses could take. And being a small business person myself, you know, I really feel for these people because they have had their entire livelihoods, their life savings, just be lost in a wink of an eye or a stroke of a pen or whatever. But it's just very sad to see all these business people suffering. And I think that in many cases, it was not necessary. But hopefully, as I say, I'm new to the whole game of politics, so I'm not speaking out a whole lot, but I do want to be a voice for the small businesses and stand up for our constituents because they are the ones who ultimately suffer.
You've been listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guests are the entire McKenzie caucus of the Pennsylvania State Legislature. That's Malou McKenzie, the freshman who was just elected to the 131st District, and her son, Ryan McKenzie, who is in his sixth term in the State House. So thanks to both of you for participating. We wish you the best of luck, and hopefully we'll have you back another time on this show. But thanks to both of you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having us, and we look forward to seeing you again in the community in the near future.
We're going to take a short break. I hope you'll stick around. We have an interesting guest coming up next. That's Rebecca Ramos, a neighborhood leader who's very involved in a new effort that our organization is part of in downtown Allentown. Stick around for more.
Connect to WDIY with our new streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances. right here on WDIY.
Welcome back. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, National Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. This is the once-a-month opportunity I get to talk about issues that I think are important in the Lehigh Valley. I want to thank James Johnson, who's the guy that runs the news operation here at WDIY. He does a great job of keeping me on track and working the machinery over there that I wouldn't even know how to turn on. So thanks to James Johnson. For the rest of the show, I have Rebecca Ramos with me. Rebecca is a young mom. She's got four kids, and she is part of a significant project in downtown Allentown that was announced last week, and she was, in fact, the person who made the announcement. Rebecca, can you tell us about the project that you announced last week?
Yes. The project is an opportunity to bring our neighborhood back to life. It's about making like a neighborhood center for the Center City kids, ages from like 2 to 24 years old.
And a whole range of activities that include youth entrepreneurship training and a Head Start class, hopefully. We're talking about programs to help kids get into college. It's a very comprehensive effort directed toward the kids in the neighborhood who need to get a better shot at opportunities than they've been getting for the last too many years. Rebecca, you're a young mom with lots of demands on your time. Why are you involved in this when so many others in the same spot are not involved in these kinds of activities?
I've been involved in the community for a very long time, since I could even remember. Since, like, when you remember Weed and Seed, the program?
Yep.
Yes, I've been involved since, thanks to my mom, she was involved in that one first. So we've been volunteering all my life, so she's been involved in a lot of community involvement. So I've just been helping her as long as I can remember. That was our first big thing, and then we did, like, block parties, and then we just, ever since then, like, just helping out the community and doing better has always been, like, so much fun to me, and seeing the changes that has happened, that I just continue going from there.
So you're not cynical about making a difference in your community. You can see the difference that you've made by being actively involved, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I've been involved for over 10 years. It mostly started back in, like, high school. You know how you have to do, like, a graduation project in order to graduate?
Yeah, sure.
Me and a couple of my friends and my younger brother, we did Snow Angels. And that was a free program for senior citizens. We went out during the snowstorms and we shoveled over 100 homes. And ever since then, like, we always, it's just been great to, like, help everyone out in need or just people in general. Doesn't matter your age or race or anything like that. And it was just great. So we just continued.
So why do you think you're so rare? You know, the voting record of people in the downtown neighborhoods is pretty bad. There's a lot of people that are upset about what's happening to the neighborhoods, and yet they're not coming out and being active. What is the difference between your, is it because of your mom, Millie Canales, or is it because of, I mean, what is the difference between you and others that you no doubt know who are not involved?
I think it's mostly because of my mother, Milagros Canales, thanks to her and her jobs that she has had in the past. And also just because I always wanted to have a voice and what goes on, because, like, I live in Center City, so, like, I want to know what's going on. I want to know what is there to do, free, or, like, how much it's going to cost. And I am a nosy person, so, like, I just want to know what's going on. So if I can be involved in it, I'm going to be involved in it. And if I have a say-so in it, you're going to know that we're going to be there, and we're going to see what's going on. We're going to help make a difference and do better. Since I have younger brothers and sisters, and now I have a daughter and a stepson, it's, like, it's with big, if it can help them and better fit them in a way, I want to make sure that, like, you know, we get it done.
That's so great. You know, as part of this project, we've got a lot of funding from corporations. We have $650,000 per year. There's got to be tax credits doled out to those companies. But there are 10 companies, and I'm going to try my best to get them all right. There's BB&T, which is at $150,000 a year, PPL at $100,000 a year, and then there are 8 companies that are in at $50,000 apiece, City Center, Dugan and Marcon, Butts Company, Wells Fargo, People's Security, Blue Cross, Capital Blue Cross, and Highmark Blue Shield. I think I got them all. Which means, you know, that in the meetings that you chair as a steering committee co-chair, You're hanging around with some pretty VIP people. You know, you're talking about corporate representatives. There are some elected officials on the steering committee. There are other nonprofit directors, and you don't seem the slightest bit intimidated by it. Why aren't you intimidated by hanging around those kinds of people?
I don't know. I just feel like everyone's the same. I don't really look at their job title. I just look at them as a person. And if they have the best interest in us in Center City where I live at, then why not treat them the same as I would treat anybody else that I know? So I don't really look at their, like, oh, my God, he's this person. Like, oh, my God, I got to be nice. I got to watch what I say. No, like, I don't want them to think, like, they're going to scare me because of their job title. I want them to know that, like, I'm going to treat you the same way I treat the garbage man, the mail lady. Like, I treat everyone the same. Doesn't matter who you are, what you do. You're a person to me. You're a human being at first. So we're all going to get treated the same. As long as you treat me with respect, I'll treat you with respect as well. My mother already taught me not to judge a book by its cover. And I feel like a job title is their cover. And so if the person's a good heart and they want good in the community, then why not treat them with respect as well?
You know, I wonder how many listeners out there are right now, like, jumping up and down, cheering for what you just said. You have so much spunk, so much energy flowing through your veins, and so much commitment to doing right. It's so refreshing, and it's just great. I mean, I think a lot of people see folks in downtown neighborhoods as people that, you know, don't want to get involved, don't want to do the right thing. And, you know, they have a bad view of people. And the reality is that the voting rates of people of color are very depressed relative to white voters. How do you think we fix that?
I feel like if people know that their vote actually counts, because a lot of people that I've seen, like, even on Facebook or, like, any social media, they always say, oh, my vote don't count, so I'm not going to vote. Like, no, just stop thinking that and just vote, and then you will see that it actually does matter, that your vote actually does count, that your voice actually can be heard if you go put it out there. People's not going to know what you want in your city if you don't speak up. If you don't speak up, then you're not going to be heard, and if you're not going to be heard, then nothing will get done. So yeah. Everyone likes to complain, like, oh, Allentown's this, Allentown's that, but, like, what are you doing to fix it? What are you doing? Oh, you're going to blame the white man, but the white man's actually there doing something that he feels is better, but you as color aren't doing anything. Just because you don't have money or you don't have anything, voice is actually the most powerful money can buy. And if your voice is heard, you're going to be priceless. And if you're priceless, then anything could get done.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. This is National Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, the Executive Director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. My guest is the very active and involved community problem solver who co-chairs the steering committee of the New Neighborhood Partnership Program, CACLV, and its subsidiary Community Action Development Corporation of Allentown, helped start in downtown Allentown. Rebecca Ramos is my guest. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Galactic Travels brings you hour-long soundscapes of electronic, ambient, and space music. That's Thursday night at 11, right here on WDIY Allentown, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. Many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. This is WDIY, National Public Radio. And my guest now is Rebecca Ramos, neighborhood leader in downtown Allentown, who co-chairs the steering committee along with Don Bernhardt, who's the executive director of the Downtown Allentown Community Development Initiative, formerly with PPL, before that, the community development director for the city of Allentown. So Rebecca is walking amid some VIPs and giants in our community. And she is not the slightest bit intimidated by that. And as a result, she's a terrific leader. Rebecca, one of the things that's frustrating is that, you know, I think a lot of people, certainly in the white community, look at people of color and think they all are one monolith. Everybody thinks the same way. our experience, of course, is that's not at all the case, right? There's a lot of disagreement among the minority community in Allentown. There isn't a consensus on a lot of things. And is that fair? Is that accurate?
Yes, I believe it's accurate.
So, but they don't break down necessarily along party lines. Because almost everybody in the neighborhood is registered Democrat. They don't break down along party lines. They break down along some other fissures. And I don't know what they are, really. I mean, can you explain some of the disagreement? You know, what has some people saying this about some things and that about something else and not agreeing, you know?
I honestly don't know. I feel like everybody wants the same thing, but I feel like everybody also wants their name on it, saying that I did this first. Instead of everyone working together to make it better, to make the city of Allentown better as one, everybody wants to be the leader and not be, you know, the co-chairs or chief. Like, everybody wants just the title that says, oh, I did this, I made this better. Instead of just working together with everyone and just making everyone happy, everybody just wants to be the owner of it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure. Now, this is kind of the obvious question that people who are involved in things that are beyond themselves, you know, that are more community-oriented, this is the standard question. You may have already heard this question. Have you got any political ambition?
No. I feel like that's one of my, I don't know how to say it. Like, I feel like that's so bad. I feel like they always, after that, they always want to go run for something, do something. I feel like that they always have, like, what is that, agenda in mind. I have no agenda besides doing better for the community and for my children that we live here. I've been living here since 2000, and I've been involved since, I can remember, since 2008, 7, 6. So, like, every year, it just gets better for me as a person. I grow and I learn new things. And I don't feel like running for something to make myself known. You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But you do know that if being on city council, you have more of a voice than if you're, you know, an activist in the neighborhood, don't you think? You have the ability to actually influence laws, right?
Yeah.
That's why, you know, somebody like me would say, hey, Rebecca, man, you ought to be running for office, you know, not because we think we're suspicious of your motives, but because we love your motives and we want you to be in a position where you can speak to those things, you know?
Yeah, I heard that before as like a couple of years has gone, that my mom shouldn't run for mayor, but I should run for mayor in her place because how she is. But that's too much of a big job for me, because then I feel like once things go, you know, left, everyone's going to blame the person in charge.
Yeah.
And instead of helping the person in charge fix things to make it better, they're like, oh, you're the mayor, you have to get it done. You're this, you're supposed to get this done. Oh, you have that head title, you have to get this done. This is your job description, you have to do this. Instead of like, okay, help me fix the problems. Like, you, okay, yes, I'm in office now, and I'm this head title, but it's like, I can't do it all. So it's like, we're a community, we all live together. Why can't we all help each other?
So another thing that I notice is that there are a lot of women of color who are very active. In fact, it seems to me that there are more women of color than there are men of color. You've got Linda Vega, and you've got Phoebe Harris, and you've got you, and you've got Jeannie Garcia, and you know, so your mom. I mean, there are so many people very active, very outspoken, very engaged in their community, and they're women. Why do you think that is occurring?
I love the women of power. Growing up, I've met Olga Negron, Phyllis Alexander. That's one of the first few women I've met in the community that helped out with my mom and the Weed and Seeds. So learning from them and seeing them all these years doing things has like always been like inspiration. And I feel like more women of color have a voice, because I feel like they're stronger when it comes to saying things and getting things done and just having power. Men, on the other hand, they feel like they're probably going to get judged or they're not going to know what to do. Us women, we do our research. We look at every bullet point. We know every fact. We know everything that we have to do in order to get it done or to learn. So I feel like it's women just get the job done faster, or they know more. Men want, you know, the easy road. They like, okay, we can go, we get this done, we'll do this. But I feel like women just are better. I'm a woman, so I feel like we're, you know, more powerful when it comes to these things.
Yeah, well, you know, I hate to tell you, but I'm with you on that. I think women are the better of the species. There's no doubt in my mind. One of the programs we run that we're going to bring into Allentown as part of this new NPP, we call She. It's essentially designed to change the power dynamic between boys and girls. There are far too many women who get caught up in guys who are taking them in the wrong direction, and they end up, you know, being set back by having kids before they're ready or by having their career set back. And so this is designed to get girls to be more, have a higher level of self-esteem, more, take more initiative and take more control. Because fundamentally, in my judgment, women are better people than men are.
Yeah.
So when we're done with this project in 6 years, what do you hope is going to be different about Allentown?
Honestly, I can't answer that. I just feel like more people will be more involved. I feel like this program, hopefully the crime rates are not high and they go down. And I feel like more people will be involved of color, men and women, all ages, honestly, because like, there's no age limit really to be involved in the community.
Right. One of the really the primary reasons why people leave Allentown is because they don't want to put their kids in the Allentown schools.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God, yes. I hear so much about the Allentown School District and how terrible it is. And all my stepson's in sixth grade. He goes to Trexler. So I've seen it, but I feel like it's also parents has to just be more involved as well, because a lot of teachers complain that they could only do so much for the student if the parents are involved as well.
Right. So how do we get that to happen then?
Well, with the program that we're building, and hopefully in the 6 years, we'll have school, like, you know, after-school programs for the kids to go to and learn extra and get the help that they need if they can get the help at home. So then it will just be, you know, helpful for everyone.
Bingo. You see why Rebecca Ramos is the co-chair of our steering committee. Rebecca, you are among the many people who are emerging in our neighborhoods that are saying, you know, what's going on isn't good enough and what we need to do is be more involved. And I just want to tell you very publicly on this radio show that I appreciate your leadership. I look forward to working with you over these next 6 years. And hopefully we have all kinds of really, really positive outcomes when all is said and done. So Rebecca, thanks for joining us. And
Thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Thank you.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, National Public Radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. You usually get political-type commentary and guests from me. I do want to say that it is painful for me to sit here and do this show and not talk about my organization. I don't want WDIY to see me as promoting my organization, but we've got some neat things going on, and every once in a while I sort of just feel like it's important enough, and I don't think I should shortchange it because it's my work. So, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years, and as you might expect, I have some opinions. And one thing I have to say is that we are now in the throes of a debate about what to do with a president that I consider to have been absolutely flat-out seditionary. I don't know how you can look at and watch and listen to what was said before January 6th and what happened on January 6th. It was anti-democratic, not anti-democratic party, anti-democracy. It was wrong. It was a disastrous move. It'll be a day that will go down in history, not unlike November 22nd or September 11th. And for us to be acting like it never happened and for senators to find it okay to give this former president a pass is utterly and totally unacceptable. And I just can't resist taking advantage of this microphone to make that point. It's not partisan. This is just based on what's right and what's wrong about our democracy and what we believe in as Americans. If you are a patriotic American, you can't possibly accept what happened on January 6th as anything but a disgrace to this nation and to its future as a democracy. Having said that, thanks again to James Johnson and to WDIY. This was Lehigh Valley Discourse. I've been your host, Alan Jennings. Thanks for joining us.